Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackedSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you. Hey, Phil, the season is here. We think maybe we're going to have games, we believe, and on the way to the tournament, possibly, we think.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
We're going to try. We're going to try to have this season. You know, I think the way I'm approaching kind of every game, I'm assuming every game has a 50-50 chance of happening until, like, I turn on my television and both teams are on the floor, and then I'll, it seems like there have just been so many cancellations and postponements, and it, you know, I guess I'm approaching the season with some very skeptical optimism is how I would phrase it.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I don't know. I would, skepticism or like pessimism, right? Like let's put it this way. The season as it looks going forward now is not how the season is actually going to turn out, right? There will be cancellations. There will be postponements. There will be shifts. So everything we say, even more so than normal, like we've got a dusting of ignorance that impacts the things we say. Just the wild uncertainties and the timing and all of that stuff is really going to impact how the season perform or the season plays out. And one of the compelling things about this, and I guess get your take on it, one of the compelling things is with the mental and like uncertainty portion of this, like how do you think a team weathers this? Like, do you think Marquette's in a position to be able to weather this uncertainty?
I think they're as in as good a position to weather it as any other team is. I think maybe teams that have more veterans, like teams that return all of their, you know, most of their scorers from last year and a lot of starters who understand the system very well, may be in better shape to say take a week or two off of practice if the program gets shut down. But I don't consider that a big disadvantage for Marquette compared to most other teams in the country. I think it's just something that everybody is going to have to deal with, is just knowing, like, hey, look, we've got 26, 27 games on the schedule. Maybe we get 20 played. Let's just hope we can keep our kids and coaches as isolated as possible. And that's been the crazy thing, is like for some schools, like I want to say with Stephen F. Austin on Tuesday morning, and then this happened with Iona too. It wasn't even like someone with the team. It was like a support staff member tested positive, and that through contact tracing, that shuts the whole program down for a week, right? Or
right.
2 weeks. And that's like how many people do you have to keep isolated to allow your, you know, 12, 13 basketball players and a handful of coaches to be able to play games? It seems like you have to keep a lot of people healthy. And just beyond those, you know, say 15, 20 people that are directly associated, that are on the court for a basketball game.
Yeah, well, I think it's one of the things that's really interesting is this exposes, if you will, the infrastructure behind, you know, Division I basketball and the NCAA, right? You've got trainers, you've got strength and conditioning, you've got academic support staff, you've got assistant coaches, you've got basketball operations, right? You've got athletic department personnel, all of which, you know, you're hoping that people that absolutely don't need to be in contact are not. But like, you know, for 13 players you see on the coach and see on the floor, and then a head coach, I mean, there's probably 3x that behind the scenes, right? And to your point, yeah. Trying, you know, and then you multiply that by, you know, what, however many teams, 361, 362 teams in Division I basketball, that is a lot of people to try and isolate for the 6 months of a basketball season.
Yeah, and you know, college football has been able to continue, not without several hiccups, but you know, just putting my, you know, fake scientist hat on here, but you know, football is a sport you obviously play outdoors, you practice outdoors, and wearing masks, obviously they're all wearing masks, you would think, most of the time when they're around campus, but basketball, you're an indoor sport, and mm-hmm. everything you do is indoors, and even if you are wearing masks, that you know you can only protect your staff and players so much. And despite great efforts by all these teams and coaches across the country, they still have coronavirus tests. I think it was like John Rothstein lists the number of programs that shut down every day. I don't think he can fit them all in one tweet now.
Right.
There are so many teams that are on pause right now. Now, granted, it's, you know, so you got like, what, 30, 40 something teams shut down. You still got more than 300 that can play. So I guess we're going to kind of power through a season here. We'll see how frustrating it gets and how many teams get shut down, how many games get canceled, or how many games get postponed. Because you know there's going to be a lot. The question is, how much is too much? Like,
right.
how many games are going to have to get postponed or canceled every week for these schools to say, you know what, we just can't do this, despite our best efforts. And I hope it doesn't get to that point, but in the back of my mind, I am bracing myself for that very real possibility that we get into December and there are so many games that get postponed that they just say, you know what, we need to hit pause for a little bit.
Right. Well, I mean, there's a couple of things. One, I think it was interesting you tweeted about, like, the idea, you know, so football, the one that's most obvious now, right? Washington Huskies were trying to schedule a game with BYU because Washington and BYU's respective opponents were both quarantined, and so the two organizations decided, hey, we need to get a game in somewhere. So they impromptu are trying to get a game together. So I think that's a good tweet. You know, it was a good, that was the thrust of your tweet. Will we see that in college basketball? And I think that's a really good question. I think there will be the potential for that. Hey, your partner dropped, my partner dropped. Again, because I think we'll see a lot of those, you know, opponents dropping. And so there will be some mutual opportunities. So I think we'll see some of that. But one of the things that's going to be interesting is basketball season, right? Like, even look at the schedule, the first 2 weeks of the schedule. Marquette plays four teams in 2 weeks. And if you have one of those opponents, you know, pop a positive test, they're quarantined for 2 weeks. So it's not like it's really practical or feasible to postpone. And then you don't ever get that time back, right? Football's a little different. You're playing once a week. If you have to cancel a week, well, then you're good to go because 2 weeks from when you can't, you know, 2 weeks from when it happened, you're probably back and playing. So basketball, just by its more condensed nature and the higher risk factor, like you pointed out, I think it is 127% probable that Marquette will have...
Very specific number.
Yes. 63.2% of all statistics are made up on the spot. I bet you didn't know that.
I did.
Okay, good. Yes, Dilbert cartoon. Anyway, it's a certainty that Marquette will have games canceled, will have games moved or postponed. The question is, will they be able to schedule on the fly to make up for canceled games, and or will they be able to make up on the back end, and will the season pause? Like, if you had to put a percentage likelihood on at least a pausing of the season for Division One, what number would you put out there?
You know, just because I think these schools are so stubborn, I would almost put it like below 30%. Like, just because I really think the schools are going to try to power through even if a bunch of games get canceled. Now, if we throw in the possibility that we could deal with a national shutdown, so, like, say, when we have a new president in the White House, then if we have to shut down the entire country, then maybe it's out of their hands, and then maybe I might bump it up to 70% if, like, it comes from the top. If it's come from the government that's going to shut, maybe we shut down everything for a month, then the NCAA doesn't have a choice. But if it's up to only the schools, I would say it's unlikely, even though most of the country or fans would be saying, look, we got to stop. But I think they would be stubborn about it, to be honest. What
yeah,
would you say?
I think they would be stubborn, to be sure. But I put it at nearly 100% certainty there will be a pause of some sort, simply because the optics of it, right? We're in the season where, you know, again, scientist hat, it comes with a monocle. It's very impressive, but also not very official. But, you know, we're in cold and flu and corona season. You know, everything's indoors. So as the population plus the holiday seasons, right, there's going to be a point where, whether it's a national shutdown or some sort of public upswell about what's going on, that it's very likely to mount pressure for the NCAA. Yeah, they're already bad at optics, right? And they're not going to necessarily, whether it's scientifically accurate or not, that they can keep going. You know, I think they're going to bow to public pressure at some point and pause the season. You know, it'll be interesting, though. I mean, again, we don't want to get we're not scientists. We don't want to get deep into this stuff. But the interesting timing as well is what happens with the vaccine, right? Like, let's assume vaccines are coming to the market over the next 3 to 4 months. You know, that's going to be a very interesting topic. Do Division I athletes, do professional athletes, do they get the vaccine ahead of others so that they can move forward with seasons? What, you know, what, and again, a vaccine doesn't necessarily make you 100% immune forever, but, you know, substantially lowers the risks. I don't know how that factors in.
Yeah, that would be interesting because, you know, the schools and probably pro sports leagues everywhere would be pushing, trying to get their guys and girls to the front of the line and say, look, hey, we're trying to get these leagues going. And, you know, it would be great to the economy if we can have these games and have fans there. So let's continue our seasons. Now, obviously, they're not going to be in line in front of the elderly or healthcare workers or, you know, frontline workers. But to your point, you know, this is something, I think it was Rick Pitino that actually said, let's just postpone the whole season for a few months and get to the point where maybe we're having the tournament in April or May. Mm-hmm. And I would hope the NCAA certainly hasn't committed to that and really hasn't said they're considering it necessarily, but I would hope that there is a backup plan to have the tournament in April or May or maybe even early June. You know, if you could have that tournament with fans there and with all of your athletes vaccinated, why wouldn't you at least be open to that possibility? I mean, they should absolutely just say, you know, look, if this, you know, it's, you know, Dr. Fauci's thrown it out there several times in the news over the last few weeks that he thinks the general public should have access to vaccines in April-ish, right? Now, will that doesn't mean necessarily the entire country is going to be vaccinated by April 1st, but that it could start rolling out in April and maybe we are truly on the other side of this thing in mid to late April or early May. And if that truly is the case, why wouldn't the NCAA just delay the tournament? You know, you could have fans there. Like, you could only sell tickets to people who are vaccinated if you want to do that. You know, that. And I hope they are.
Yeah, well, I guess it brings up a good point. And I think this is where the inefficiencies in the structure of the NCAA governing bodies in relation to the conferences, in relation to all the schools at writ large, right? This is much harder than trying to turn the Titanic. But I don't understand why you wouldn't explore, again, given the timing, why you wouldn't explore, like, just pushing the season back 2 months, right? Instead of starting November, like, the season is already weird. Right. And it's already up in the air, especially with all, you know, like you said, the Rothstein tweet of it doesn't even fit in 170 characters or whatever the hell we have now. Right. But like, if there are that many teams out of operation, there will be that many teams out of operation pretty much through for the next couple of months. Highly likely, especially with the holidays involved. So why wouldn't you say, hey, look, we get it. Weird season. Let's start in February. Right. Optically, it looks like you're doing your part. It really doesn't impact you financially. Yes, you're delaying some revenue coming in. But, you know, if it gives you an opportunity to have revenue on the backside, right? Like, if you go continuously from February to June with the tournament in, you know, May or June, and you have a semblance of a real competitive environment, I don't know why you wouldn't do that.
Yeah, like,
right? Like, why not have a continuous season and play it in May or June, and then say, okay, next November we start as normal.
Yeah, it's, look at it this way: you could have a season on schedule between November and ending first week of April, where you get 70% of your games in with no fans there.
Right.
Or you could start, say, in, like you said, February, maybe even get more organized and do regional bubbles for non-conference and then do bubbles for conference play. And who knows, maybe you get 80% plus of your games in, and then towards the back end, you get to have a tournament with fans there. Why would you consider that? I would hope they are. Yeah. They haven't said they're not going to do that necessarily. They just say right now the plan is to be on schedule. And what we're trying to say are we hope there are options to delay the season and something that they could look. And the thing is, most teams have only put out a schedule up until Christmas. I think maybe going back to your question earlier of the percentage chance of a pause, maybe it's much higher than that because maybe they are anticipating just seeing where they are at Christmas and say, look, this has gone well, we're going to keep going, or say, look, this has been a nightmare, we're going to stop. So maybe maybe there is a higher chance of a pause because for Marquette, there is no game on the schedule after Christmas right now. So I think a lot of teams are going to look at it during the holidays between Christmas and New Year's and say either, look, we're doing okay as well as college football has this year, and that's good enough, so we're going to charge forward. Or if we get that to that point in like almost half the games are canceled every week, they say, look, this is a nightmare. We're risking everyone's health and we're not making any money either. Let's just hit pause and then let's try to do better in the spring.
Yeah, I suspect what's going to happen. Like, again, I would, if I was, you know, Pope of the college basketball world, I think I would do a full stop till like, again, January, February, something like that, so you can get the season in sequence. I suspect what's going to happen is they're going to try and sprint through some non-conference games and know some non-conference games are just going to fall off, right? But hope to get, let's say, a maximum of five non-conference games per team played. And then I think there's each of the conferences will basically look at it and say, okay, it's at, you know, like DePaul's quarantine, Seton Hall's quarantining right now, right? Can the Big East move forward if, you know, a third of the teams are in quarantine at some point in time? I would argue no, it just doesn't make sense from a competitive balance standpoint. So I suspect we'll sprint through a non-conference. Then there may be a pause where all once you get to the conference section, where they kind of go, all right, and maybe you get a Big Ten that goes to a bubble approach, or you get a Big East that says, hey, we're going to delay till February, right? But the conferences will collectively work with the NCAA to say, all right, what are we pegging the tournament to? Because that's, at the end of the day, that is all this is about, right? Getting enough games and enough interest and enough value out of the games that you can get one of those 68 slots in the tournament because, yes, there's conference revenue, TV revenue, non-conference revenue, etc. But that's the big prize, getting in that tournament. And you can certainly bubble the tournament. So that's what everyone's got the incentive to. How do I get the most number of my teams to the tournament?
Right.
And I think that's going to play out in different structures. It's going to be chaotic, but I think it's going to be a pause.
And I think the idea of having conference play in a bubble makes it feasible what we were talking about earlier about scheduling games last minute. Like if you have, say for the Big East case, all 11 teams in the same location, in the same city, and you've got, you know, three teams that are shut down and eight teams that are healthy, you could just kind of say, okay, look, you eight teams that are healthy, you guys play for the next 2-3 weeks. And then when these other three teams get healthy, they can join the fray and we get those games played and maybe somebody else gets shut down. And then it's much easier to shift schedules as opposed to, you know, what we were talking about earlier. Like say, let's say hypothetically next week, Oklahoma State has a positive test and whoever Northwestern is playing has a positive test. You know, Wojo and Chris Collins could get on the phone and say, hey, you guys want to play? And while that's possible, there are some certain number of a little more logistical things that would go into that as far as booking an arena and travel and who pays for it and things like that. But if you're all in a bubble, kind of scheduling last-minute games is a lot easier.
Right. Well, that's one of the things, that's the economic factor that I don't think people are totally grasping, right? Like the non-conference schedule is actually where teams are presumably losing the most money, right? Because the bigger teams, if you will, the more popular teams are actually paying the non-conference opponent to come in. Normally that's made up with revenue from ticket sales, right? Like I'm paying Arkansas Pine Bluff, you know, $200,000 to come play me, and I'm making that up with ticket sales for attendance and whatever else. Plus, you know, there's some TV revenue sharing there, right? So it's the non-conference games that are the most fiscally draining on the universities. So I think, again, we're going to see a sprint through the non-conference. And then, to your point, once we get to the, you know, and so there will be some horse trading and, hey, I'm Northwestern, you're Marquette, let's get together and call it a wash type of thing, because they need games of inventory for TV. But I think it's going to be interesting how it all works out, because you do have that financial piece where all of the lower tier, you know, I'd say the 200 plus teams from an RPI or KenPom ranking standpoint, their financial model is entirely predicated on being paid by the better teams.
Yeah, the lack of bye games is going to be really tough on these small schools, because, you know, these small schools definitely depend on those, whatever, 8, 9, 10 games where they're getting paid to go take a beating somewhere. It's not great for their record, but it sure is great for their bottom line to get all those bye. That's why they call them bye games, because teams are paying these teams to come in and basically take a beating, or, you know, and usually they do. But they're not getting many of those games this year. Like, for example, Marquette is only has 3 games that you would consider bye games, right? And everything else is a power conference team, pretty much, that they're playing, and then they get in the conference.
Well, I guess this is kind of a point I'm stumbling on. I didn't intend to make it, but like, if there are non-conference games that are rescheduled, I think by and large you're going to see them rescheduled against power conference teams, right? Because again, an Arkansas Pine Bluff, if their 3 opponents cancel, are they going to get a randomly, you know, let's say they have time on their calendar and Duke is like, hey, we need someone, all of our opponents have canceled. Is Duke going to shell out money for Arkansas right. Pine Bluff to come in and play? I don't know that they would, because Duke's not getting any revenue coming in. And is Arkansas Pine Bluff going to go play if they're not being paid for it?
Right.
I don't know that they are. So it may be interesting from a competitive standpoint. We may see a lot more like power, you know, whatever that we're calling the 6 conferences that are, you know, not the walk-ons, right? But like those 6 conferences playing each other more in non-conference, simply because the traditional bye opponents are out of the equation.
Yeah, it would be, we'd be wild to see, for example, like, trying to think, 2 power teams that are really close to each other, like something like
Indiana and Purdue?
Yeah, like Indiana. So I'm trying to think non-conference, like, you know, Georgetown and Maryland or something. You know, like they right. just all of a sudden say, hey, you're free this week, I'm free this week, let's hang out, let's play a game.
Right.
You know, if things like that happen. So, but who I don't know it will, but I would think that would be very tempting for a team. Like, say you're looking at your schedule and your team is healthy, but you don't have a game scheduled for 10 days. To just look around and say, all right, who's a bus ride away that we could schedule a game right. with? You know, I think that might happen in some instances. It's a lot easier said than done, but yeah, we will see if that happens. But I guess for the time being, we just have to focus on the games that are on the calendar and assume they are played until they aren't. Before we get to the 2 opponents this week, you know, these are 2 games that Marquette should win. I do want to touch on some of the news of the past week, probably the most notable as it relates. Well, actually, before we get to the current team, let's give a quick shout-out to Marcus Howard. Didn't get drafted, which was a bummer, but the good news was he got a 2-way deal with the Denver Nuggets. Happy to see him get an opportunity. Who knows if he, you know, will make the team, make the roster, but he'll certainly get a chance to do it. And if not, he'll be in the G League for a year, most of the year, and get his opportunities when he sees fit, if the Denver Nuggets have an injury. And who knows, with COVID situations, there may be times when guys have to shut down, and maybe you need those 2-way players more than you normally would. So congrats to Marcus Howard. I hope he gets his opportunity. I hope he gets some minutes in the NBA, and we'll see how it works out for him. Obviously, we're all pulling for him because he's our guy.
Yeah, well, and he's got an elite skill. I mean, I would make the argument, if Steve Novak stuck in the NBA for what was it, 8 seasons?
I think he had a full 10. Yeah, I think he played a decade.
Was it a full 10? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't see any reason. Again, obviously very different styles, very different positions. But like Marcus Howard has just as an elite a skill as Steve Novak did.
Right.
So there's no reason to suspect he can't stick in the league in some capacity for 8, 9, 10 years.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I mean, that is an interesting comparison because obviously one guy is 5'11", another guy is 6'9", 6'10". But your point remains. You're talking about in both instances, you're talking about a guy with an elite ability to shoot the ball, and really no other NBA level skill as far as being right. a defender or passer, or rebound, or anything like that. But Marcus Howard does have that 3-point shooting ability at an elite level, a very high level, and even at
in a league that puts a big premium on it, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, the NBA is more perimeter oriented than ever, and Howard's shown, despite his size, that he can get his shot off over taller defenders many, many times. And we'll see. Obviously, Denver's got plenty of guards. Jamal Murray's one of the rising stars in the league. Michael Porter's one of their perimeter guys. I know he's like a forward, but still, I mean, that's another guy on the perimeter. They just drafted RJ Hampton, who's going to be in the backcourt, and you know, they've got big plans for him, but can't have too many shooters. So good luck to Marcus. Hope he sticks in the league. Hope he sticks with the Nuggets or somewhere else.
Right. And we should probably also shout out Wesley Matthews, who got paid to go probably win a ring with LeBron and the Lakers.
Yeah, Wes. I really wanted Wes to get a ring with the Bucks. Thought it might happen last year, but it looks like now he may have that opportunity with the LA Lakers. His dad played for the Lakers, correct?
Correct. He did.
So he's going where his dad played. So he'll have a shot to win a ring with the Lakers. So good for Wes.
And I know this isn't an NBA podcast, but this offseason has convinced me 100%. I have no idea how the salary cap in the NBA works, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. The salary cap is a big deal until it isn't.
Right.
Just find
there are rules until there aren't.
Yeah. Just the same with tampering. It's tampering until it isn't.
Right.
It depends on the team, I guess, whether it's tampering or not. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Let's talk about the current team. And before we talk about this week's opponents, interesting news with the roster. Jose Perez is eligible now. You know, Paint Touches had reported earlier in the summer that they had reached out to the university and got official word from the school that Jose Perez was not applying for a waiver. And this was, again, back, I want to say, May or June or whenever, shortly after he committed. But that DJ Carton was applying for one and got it, but Jose Perez did not even apply for one. But apparently that changed sometime in the last month or two, and he got approved to play this year. So Jose Perez, a guy that originally it was anticipated that he would sit out this season and then be on the roster for 2 years when probably Marquette may be in a little thinner at the guard spot based on who they would be losing over the next year or two. But I guess maybe, Phil, this is a situation that since every player, I guess, is going to get a free year thanks to COVID, that they could technically have Jose Perez for 3 years now. So it's not like they're losing a year with him necessarily, unless he just decides to leave on his own, graduates and just decides he's done playing college ball. But they're going to get him this year and potentially still for the 2 years after this that they had originally planned.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think it's kind of we can get a year. I also, and it's behind the paywall, but Ben Steele in one of his articles after the observations of the Marquette basketball scrimmage. So I would encourage everyone to go, A, pay for Ben's work, and B, go read that article. But I don't want to say implied because it was a little more overt than that, but basically, Ben Steele was reporting that Dexter Akano was still suffering from, as he described it, COVID-like symptoms. So if we take that, all that it implies, that Dexter is still struggling with COVID perhaps and may have been one of the reasons the program paused in early November by testing positive, You would think this move is coupled, right? We get that free year. Plus, if guard depth was a little more questionable than previously intended, right? Like if Dexter's not going to get back up to speed for a while, given his recovery time, I think it makes some sense. I'm gonna make this next statement with a huge caveat because I don't know how that's gonna turn out. I haven't honestly seen Jose Perez play, but I mean, based on some of the reports I've seen, I'm not sure that Jose like is going to move the needle for the season. Like, I don't change any of the season preview statements we made last time. But I think he gives you depth that you can, and experience, which this team doesn't have a lot of, that hopefully you can call upon. So it's, if it's true that he's really kind of backstopping Dexter as Dexter recovers, that's not great, but I think it's good news to have another guard with experience eligible on this roster.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to get free depth, why not take it, is kind of my take on it. If you can get an extra guy eligible who can help you this year, even if it's only for, you know, 5, 6, 7 minutes a game, who knows how much he's going to play. But, you know, Ben Steele was, I guess, watching a scrimmage last week, and he said a lot of good things about Perez, and I just chimed in. I just asked him there on Twitter, said, hey, is Jose still sitting out this year, or has that changed? And at the time, Ben said, still sitting out. He just looks really good, has a lot of swagger. I think he's going to help the team. And that, again, so it must have been kind of a secret, because, like, less than a week later, the official Marquette basketball account tweeted Jose Perez is eligible and he's playing this year. Like, so wow, that changed in a hurry. So who knows when they applied for that waiver and how long they've been waiting on an answer, but it obviously was more recent than when he first transferred, because like I said, Paint Touches had reported earlier in the summer that he wasn't going to play this year because the NCAA or the university just flat out told him, yeah, we're not going to apply. But they obviously changed their mind at some point. And yet I agree with you, it's, you know, it's good to have the depth, especially if, as Ben implied, that Dex may be slow to come back. Again, he hasn't outright said he had COVID, but again, it kind of implied in the article that he was struggling with symptoms like that. So if they're going to be cautious bringing him back and let him get up to speed, and who knows, he may be in for a longer recovery than anticipated. We'll see. Hopefully he's back this week, but they haven't said anything about it. I think recently, as last week, he wasn't even practicing with the team. I don't know if he... I want to say I saw him in the videos they released recently. I don't know if those were, like, previously recorded from earlier in the fall or whatever, but we'll see how much Dex plays. But again, just to have an extra guard back there if, say, you have another COVID situation or you just have an injury, you know, because obviously Guys like Greg Elliott and Kobe are coming off injuries, coming off surgeries, and you never know when you're going to lose anybody. So just to have an extra guard back there, scholarship-level guard, it's certainly not a bad thing. We'll see how much he plays.
Yeah, but much like NBA salary cap, I don't know that I understand the eligibility rules anymore and what gets a waiver. Like, does everybody get a waiver? Is it Oprah? You get a waiver.
I think the NCAA has been particularly liberal with waivers this year, just knowing they are giving everybody a free year, essentially. So as opposed to, like, just forcing guys to sit out and having guys that may be on scholarship for six or seven years because of this thing, they've just got almost given blanket waivers to everybody. Just say, look, just everybody play, just start the clock on your free year. Let's redshirt as few people as possible. The list of guys across the country who have transferred, applied for waivers and been denied is a very small list. I think, I think they're just letting everybody play because of the idea. First of all, you know, they don't know how long this season's going to last, and everyone's getting a free year if they want it on the back end anyway. So I think they're just letting everybody play this year. We'll see. And those things have been getting looser and looser, generally speaking, even before COVID. Who knows? This may push it to the point where they may give everybody a free year, transfer year anyway, which was on the table before this whole COVID thing happened. They just kind of tabled it once they were dealing with other issues.
Yeah, well, and don't get me wrong. I mean, as someone that is a strong advocate for NIL recognition for the players, and, you know, and decries the whole coaches can leave and not sit out and move for greener pastures, but if a player has a bad situation, wants to move, they have to sit out a year. Like, I'm all for kind of this modernization of the eligibility rules. I just think it's funny that, again, like everything else, that we had rules until we didn't, and now we're just winging it. And okay, like, let's all deal with the consequences, you know, a year or two from now, right? Because I think one of the things that's going to be interesting, and I think the Jose Perez situation is a prime example. I mean, in theory, yeah, he's got that extra year, so he can stay as long as he was going to stay anyway. But like, what does this do from, you know, activating players earlier than anticipated and some players maybe taking extra years and others not? Like, 2 years from now, the scholarship table is going to look really wonky, and there's going to be some real, like, you're going to have to play four-dimensional chess with some of the recruiting, because you may have some players staying that you weren't anticipating, and others not staying that right. You were anticipating, right? Like, it's going to be chaos 2 years
from now. Yeah, and the way I understand it is, like, with that, I'm just going to call it the COVID year for the sake, just the ease of the discussion, that, you know, if you decide to use this free year to get play one more on the back end, you do not count against your team's scholarship limit.
Correct.
So you could hypothetically have 14, 15 guys on the roster, but if you transfer, you do count on your new team scholarship limit. So let's yep. just like say, for example, a senior this year who is going to be out of eligibility decides to take the free COVID year and stay a fifth year in school, but transfer and go to another school, then that new team, he counts towards the 13 scholarship limit. But if he stays at his old school, then he could be scholarship player number 14 or scholarship player number 15. So, like, it's hard enough to keep 12 players happy to make sure everybody gets the ball and the playing time they want.
Right.
See, I don't know how many coaches, like, depth is great, but I don't know how many coaches would say, yeah, I want 16 guys on my roster. Like, what do you do if you had 15 scholarship players on your roster? How do you keep them all happy? It's really difficult. And cause,
well, not only that, but then you also, like, have to fund the scholarship, right? Like, that's going to be the other crunch, right? A team could, you're right, have 15, 16 scholarship players, but let's pretend for a minute, just to make the math easy. Let's say funding a year of scholarship is a $200,000 outlay, right? That may be a ridiculous number, but let's go with it, right? Carrying, you know, an extra three players on the roster from a scholarship perspective may be an extra $500,000 for programs that are losing revenue and incurring costs during this year. So there's going to be a ton of, like, you know, we're going to have the devil to pay in the outlying years to deal with, you know, all this revenue loss that they're experiencing now. Are coaches going to want, you know, and athletic directors going to want to carry all that additional cost? Yeah. I mean, we even saw it, not to pick on Bucky too much, but we saw it, like, in the early days of COVID, when the NCAA came out and said, hey, the spring athletes can get an extra year. And Barry Alvarez basically had a press conference that said, nah, fam, we're good. You guys, go ahead and graduate. Don't come back.
Yeah, if you hadn't gone there, I was going to go there. And, like, again, it's low-hanging fruit. Again, I'm not necessarily picking on Wisconsin, but it is fact. Barry Alvarez got some blowback there. But, yeah, he did essentially say, their current seniors, they're done. We thank them for their time, but we're done. Like, and it's cold-blooded, but you're right. There is a financial aspect to it, and if schools have to foot the bill for extra athletes on their own, they may not want to do it. And that's
right.
It, I guess that comes off as cold-blooded, but there is a bottom line they have to meet. Is when it comes to, you know, schools having to cut sports or lay off staff or things like that, and they may not want the extra players, and they may go to these kids who do want the extra year of school. Say, look. You've had a great career here, but we just can't afford the extra roster spot, and you're free to transfer wherever you want to go, but you can't stay here. So that may be something that schools are dealing with after the season. So
the next 2 years are going to be chaotic for sure.
Yeah, until this whole thing evens out, like 3 or 4 years down the road when everyone has used their COVID year. Now, a lot of players may not even want to use it. Like, if you've played 4 or 5 years of basketball and you have your degree, maybe you're just done with college. Say, look, it's time to see what my pro options are, or maybe just time to get a job. Let's, you know, just use this degree I've got and just go make, you know, start whatever career I'm going to be in for the rest of my life. But so not a lot of kids are going to use it, I don't think. I don't think as many players are going to use that free year as some people may assume. A lot of if you've played 4 years, you have your degree, it's like, all right, let's see if I can play pro ball anywhere, and if not, it's time to make some money. Let's get a job. So I think a lot of kids will do that, but Hey, should we talk about the two opponents this week before we get out of here?
Might as well sometimes talk about something nice.
So, you know, the two opponents this week, obviously these are two games that Marquette should be pretty heavily favored to win. Start with Arkansas Pine Bluff. These games are going to be sandwiched around your Thanksgiving. So one on Wednesday night, and then the next will be on Friday evening. Both are going to be held in Milwaukee. But Arkansas Pine Bluff, look, there's no nice way to say it. They were one of the worst teams in the country last year. And KenPom has them as one of the worst this year. KenPom's preseason ranking says Arkansas Pine Bluff at 353. That's out of 357 teams. Not all teams are playing, by the way, but I think there were only like 330-something teams that are actually going to play this year, 340-something teams, and that may continue to drop. But for what it's worth, out of all teams in Division I basketball, they are in the bottom five. They were 4-26 last year, and last year in college basketball, out of 353 teams, their offense was ranked 353. So
that seems not good.
Dead freaking last. Again, not trying to be a jerk, but those are just the stats. So put quite simply, this is a team Marquette should defeat, and defeat quite soundly. They do bring back a few guys that they're hoping to get a little more out of, but still, Phil, trying to be as respectful as I can, this is a team Marquette should handle pretty easily.
Yeah, this is exactly a team that you play when you want to figure out what you have, kind of knock the rust off the returning players and kind of expose the incoming players to a team that is not your own team, right? Like, there's no secret scrimmages this year. There's, you know, so, and we can decry the Arkansas Pine Bluff and their ranking from a NCAA tournament, you know, KenPom, Sagarin kind of analytics standpoint. But it's quite frankly a game you want to play, get under your belt, get competitive minutes, and get out of there with a win. That's all it is.
Yeah, again, just again, not to pick on them, just reading the stats. But again, there were 353 teams last year. Their offensive efficiency was 353. Their effective field goal percentage was 349. Their turnover percentage on offense was 351. Their free throw percentage was 352, and their steal percentage was 353. So, not great. It's a swag.
This is the new podcast motto, right? Not criticism, just facts.
Not criticism, just facts. Exactly. That's all I'm saying. This is it's a bye game opponent. It's a mid to lower level swag team. It's a team that Marquette should defeat, and they absolutely should. Now, their defense was not horrid last year. I mean, it wasn't great, but it was in the mid 200s on KenPom, so they had some respectable numbers defensively. So they may try to get after you on defense, but they just were not a very skilled team offensively. So,
the conclusion is, don't draw too many conclusions from this game.
Yes.
Unless Marquette loses, and then draw all the conclusions.
Yes, and then we could go ahead and shut down the program for reasons other than COVID. Move on to the Friday game. So again, assuming that should be hopefully a comfortable win against Arkansas Pine Bluff on Wednesday, then we hopefully have a nice Thanksgiving, even if you're isolated because of COVID and just have to eat it by yourself. But so going to Friday, that it will be Eastern Illinois. Now, this is a little bit better bi-level opponent. KenPom has them actually relatively high for a bi-level opponent, 166. So this team may actually give Marquette a bit of a fight. They actually return their top seven scorers, plus they've added a grad transfer in the middle from Siena. So they actually have... This is actually an experienced team. Like, talk about limited practice time over the summer and beginning of the fall because of COVID restrictions. They're bringing back a lot of guys who are familiar with the program and familiar with the scheme and, you know, all the things they do. So they should be able to hit the ground running pretty well for the level of opponent that they are. But this is still a game that KenPom favors Marquette in pretty comfortably. Eastern Illinois, though, actually gave Wisconsin a fight last season. They only lost to them by 13, so they may have actually given Marquette a better fight, or given Wisconsin a better fight than Marquette did a year ago. So this is a little bit more of a challenging opponent, but still this is a team, Phil, that Marquette should defeat.
Yeah, so this should be a win for Marquette, but I would expect Marquette to struggle, especially in the first half. I think this is a classic. Marquette knocks the rust off against an easy opponent first, gets maybe a little overconfident or a little over their skis, and then has to kind of reset in this game. Again, given everything else going on, I would expect this game to be a little bit of a struggle initially, but then ultimately a Marquette victory. No matter how ugly it looks, I think
sweat Marquette too much if this is only like a 3 or 4 point game at the half, or who knows, maybe even a single digit victory when it's all said and done. But the one thing that does jump out to me about Eastern Illinois' stats from last year, really one of the worst 3-point shooting teams in the country. They were 290 in KenPom in 3-point shooting percentage, but they were actually really good defending the three. Now this Marquette team may not be as heavily dependent on 3-point shot as they have been during the Marcus Howard era, but looks like Eastern Illinois does guard the perimeter pretty well. So might be a decent defensive effort from this Eastern Illinois team. We'll see how much Marquette actually fires away from three compared to last year, past four or five years really. But that's the one thing that kind of jumps out for me about Eastern Illinois stats from last year. Very poor shooting the ball, but pretty good defending the three.
Yeah, I think the big takeaway from these two games will be, like, if I was to advise somebody other than just hate watching, like, look at the defensive structure. Like, what does Marquette deploy? Because in the Wojo era, with the occasional, you know, doing zone looks or whatever, Wojo has basically come up with his defensive scheme, as it were, and kind of sticks with it. So I think these two games will really tell us what the defense looks like for Marquette going forward. So I think that'll be interesting to get kind of an early read on where this team is gonna stand defensively. And the other thing that'll be interesting, speaking of Wisconsin, is it's kind of a mirror setup. So Wisconsin plays both of these opponents on the opposite days when we play them, right? So we play Arkansas Pine Bluff on Wednesday, Wisconsin plays Eastern Illinois, and then we essentially flop for Friday and play the opposite teams. So if nothing else, that will be an interesting marker for how we compare to, say, a Wisconsin.
Yeah, I guess I kind of forgot that. This is almost kind of a somewhat of an
mini bubble.
Yeah, an MTE setup, right? This is kind of like the State of Wisconsin multi-team event where it's Eastern Illinois and Pine Bluff are coming up to the state of Wisconsin to play the two upper level, the two power conference Division I teams in Wisconsin. Eastern Illinois and Pine Bluff are going to play Marquette and Wisconsin, and then Marquette and Wisconsin playing each other. So it is kind of a little mini MTE. That will be interesting to see, and to judge, I guess, the gap in the scores, right, and see if, like I say, if Marquette only beats them by 10 and Wisconsin beats them by 25, then maybe we, you know, people will draw their conclusions from that. Not necessarily that makes any sense.
Transitive property.
The transitive property is the word. That's the word I'm looking for. It doesn't always work out, but people are going to do that anyway. So, yeah. Little Thanksgiving holiday in Wisconsin for Pine Bluff and Eastern Illinois. So, yeah, so keep an eye on those other games, too, just if you want to judge the next opponent on Wednesday. And then, yeah, then we meet the Badgers next week. Wisconsin does not have a game scheduled before then between these two games and the meeting next Friday, but Marquette does. But they'll play Oklahoma State. We'll talk about that one on the next podcast, but I am looking forward to that Oklahoma State game and Cade Cunningham, who's a guy, you know, I've seen in high school quite a few times, but really freaking good. So this is really two very contrasting weeks, as this week should be two pretty comfortable wins, and next week I think would be a real fight.
Yeah, for sure. Have we now, what's interesting is the first four games that Marquette has this is weird. I thought Oklahoma State was in Oklahoma State, but no, it's not. They're all home.
Yeah.
So the first four games are home.
Marquette only leaves the state once, and that's to go to UCLA. That's
that's the game I was thinking of.
Before conference play, that's the only time Marquette leaves the state, is the UCLA game.
Yes, that's right. You're right. I was thinking I flipped Oklahoma State and UCLA in my head. But I'm just looking at the official Marquette schedule on GoMarquette.com, and I noticed I thought there was debate about whether Marquette was going to play in the Fiserv or at the Al, since no fans are in attendance. These are all saying Fiserv. Have we heard officially if they're playing in the Fiserv?
As long as it says Fiserv, that's what I'm going to assume. I haven't heard any If they were going to change it, you would think they would have done it by now, especially for the games.
Well,
this week.
Hey, the Bucks got to get that rent check.
maybe that is the situation, that Marquette has to pay the rent whether they play there or not, so they might as well play in the big arena. Maybe if they got a break on their rent, they would play more games at the Amaguire Center. But again, the Fiserv with no fans is going to be quite empty, very quiet yes. place. But we'll.
I wonder. So we've seen this a little bit. We saw it a little bit in the NBA bubble, and we've seen it a little bit like in the NFL and college football. How much do you think we are going to hear, like especially in a game like Arkansas Pine Bluff, how much do you think we're going to hear like of Wojo and the coaching staff coaching the players?
I think you'll hear quite a bit because you can hear them.
Yeah.
Somebody might have to be ready with the drop button a few times because, you know, whether it's from the players or the coaches or even the officials, you know, those naughty words tend to hit the microphones much easier when it's a quiet arena. So get the drop button ready for all these games. But yeah, I think you'll probably be able to hear the coaches pretty well. Now, I guess that also depends on how much camera equipment and, you know, if the natural sound microphones that would maybe normally be courtside, if they have the, you know, staff to run those things. But I think you'll be able to hear the coaching pretty well. And yeah, that'll be interesting.
Boy, that'll make for some interesting analysis.
Yes. I'm sure people will react very logically to anything they hear Wojo say.
Correct.
On the sideline.
I'm sure Marquette Twitter will be very even-handed during the Wojo coaching sessions.
I'm just looking forward to the memes.
Oh, so many memes.
We'll be ready. Hey, I guess that's
I am actually excited, regardless of the results. I'm excited to have Marquette Twitter fully back.
Yeah, me too. And for as long as we have it, the reactions, the Arby's, all of it on Marquette Twitter. Looking forward to interacting with you guys again as we follow Marquette basketball. As long as we have games. Hopefully we have them from now all the way into April. But who knows? Like I said, there might be pauses. There may be interruptions. But yeah, looking forward to being back with MUBB Twitter. It is good times.
Absolutely.
I guess that's going to do it for this edition of Scrambled Eggs. We appreciate you guys tuning in and joining us. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com. We post the podcast there. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. We're also on Spotify now, so that's big and fancy. And we also have the Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. Post the podcast there as well. Phil, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
I just want to give a big shout-out to Stinky and Dirty on Amazon Prime for doing a great job of babysitting my son while we recorded this podcast. So thanks to them, we got a typically mediocre podcast out.
Yeah. You know, stepping all over each other and everything. So, I mean Stinky and Dirty could be a name for this podcast at times. So
That's going to be our alternative when the season tanks. We'll do analytics on Stinky and Dirty.
Yeah, I like it. We'll plan on that then. So until next time, everybody, have a great Thanksgiving and seashells and balloons.